You are listening to the Gay Florida Man Podcast. This podcast is hosted by retired corrections officer Mark DeWolf, who will discuss various topics prevalent to corrections, gay culture, arts and entertainment, as well as current events. Listeners need to be advised that this podcast will discuss situations involving extreme violence, substance abuse, sexual assault, and murder. Details of actual events have been modified so as to protect the privacy of involved parties.
Welcome back to the Gay Florida Man Podcast. This is episode 46. Please make sure you follow us on social media. We have a Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube page where there's lots of additional media on the subjects that we talk about on this podcast. On today's episode, we're talking about external security. We've talked up to this point about all the happenings inside the fence line, but what about the guys and girls that handle the towers, the fence line, the after-hours transports, the Charlie units, the gates, the ambulance runs, and dealing with other law enforcement agencies that might have to come on prison property? That would be external security. Now, joining me to talk about external security would be Officer Dirk. Officer Dirk is retired, and we go way back. We've worked together for years when we were both still working there, and we connect very well. He used to also throw a lot of Halloween parties, and kind of a surprising little fact is that I officiated he and his wife Emily's wedding. So let's jump in and talk about external security. Officer Dirk, how are you?
I am doing amazing, Mark. How are you?
You know, everybody that's left the prison says, I'm doing amazing.
Yes.
That's weird how that works.
It's like your aura or your spirit just lifts out and is free.
It's a huge emotional moment when you get to retire from that place because you saw it and I saw it. There's so many people over the years, they get closer and closer to that threshold where they can retire. Something happens, whether it's a DUI or a domestic or an angry spouse, something just gets them and it sucks.
I've seen quite a few of those over the years, huh?
It's sad. It's really sad, you know. Yeah. But we're going to stay positive and we're going to be talking today about something that you did for a long time. I know you have a bunch of different caps that you wore while you were working there at the prison, but I knew you a lot of the time working external security.
I was Charlie 1, Charlie 5, and Charlie 1, and nights and days and 8+ years of that.
That's a long time. So for people that don't know a lot about the prison there in Utah, when it was actually at the point of the mountain, there was internal security and there was external security. You've got the fences and the perimeter. You got the towers. You got transports. Anything outside of the fence line is basically external security, right, Dirk?
Correct. Yep.
I did overtime. I never had a regular shift as external security. I would do overtime as a Charlie unit or a tower. I'm trying to think of what else would be incorporated into external security. It's basically...
We did have UMC. We had people up there for the UMC, the hospital.
Yes, that's right. So, I forgot about that.
Yeah, we did. That was a nightmare.
And it's always unpredictable as to what's going to happen because it could be 2 a.m, an inmate's giving birth, or somebody's having seizures, heart attack. Boom, you guys got to organize real quick to handle that transport, whether it be by ambulance or whatever, up to the hospital or the closest hospital.
Yep. And it's just, hey, I need 2 people right now or whatever. And you just go and do it.
When you're working external security, there was a time period where they wanted people working external security to be category 1, right?
Correct.
Officer, yep. Certified.
Yeah, I was one of the last ones to go through before they changed that. And
you were already working for the department and they put you through it?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yep, very
when I
nice.
Went outside, they sent me through the law enforcement officer part of it. And so I don't recommend that if you're like over 30.
Well, I went through the police academy in 1996, the summer of 96. When I was working for a police agency, they put me through, they sponsored me. And then I worked for that agency for a very short period of time. And that will be a whole nother podcast because eventually I'm going to have to talk about that place. The following summer, I was hired by corrections. So the following summer, the summer of 97, I ended up going through the corrections academy.
Mm-hmm.
So I was dual certified as both a corrections officer and a peace officer, but I had very little interest in working external security other than overtime.
A position came open and I wanted it. So I was like, oh, let's go. And I just made sergeant. Well, not okay. Just, but been a sergeant about a year and I had to get out of freaking the UNAs. I couldn't do that place. So I put in and voila, got picked up. And the rest is history.
So again, we're talking on a podcast here about people that may or may not have worked at the prison. Talk about mm-hmm. external security, like basically the average shift and the responsibilities.
I mean, you name it. It's just anything outside. We had the VDS we had to take care of, visitors in and out, ambulances, fire trucks. We had to take care of all that was coming in. We also had the fence lines. Those are the reason we were out there was, you know, for the fence lines to prevent escapes. We had zones, you know, the dual fences had zones in between, and we had to, if an alarm went off in there, it was our job to respond to that and make sure nobody wasn't climbing the fence. And it's everybody says outside and all you outside, you only did left turns, right?
Mm-hmm.
There was so much more to that. I mean, it was just really in depth.
Well, I remember when I was working there and I was doing overtime shift. So you had the control tower, which was behind the Wasatch facility.
Right.
That big brick building. And they're the ones that control the zones. So whether Correct. It be a gust of wind or, God forbid, somebody on the fence or an animal passes through and it picks up that movement, they'll get on the radio and they'll call the ground units, which are the trucks that drive around the perimeter of the different facilities, and
right.
say alarm zone, and all the zones were marked on the fence with little metal plaques.
Correct. Yeah.
You get an alarm and you have to respond to that alarm in so many seconds, right, Dirk?
Yeah, it was just you get there and under a minute, they wanted it under a minute, but okay. So you get that call and it's just boom, hit it and go.
You get there and then you look through the zone, you might see a bird, a skunk or whatever. And then you clear the zone with the tower saying that it's all clear. There's nothing there. If it was a skunk, you'd probably say, hey, there's a skunk in that area. So it's going to be a few minutes. It's going to keep going off.
Yeah. You let them know what's in there or what you find, you know, it's all clear. There's a skunk, there's birds in there, birds. Yeah, or like you said, the wind, snow, rain, anything would set those fence lines off. It was a pretty touchy system.
In the 20 years that I was there, I think of twice where inmates were on the fence or in between the fences. And I don't know if you were working at any time when that happened. Do you know of any times where you were working where you had to respond and it was the real deal?
Yeah, we had one. Of course, it's on overtime shift, right? Because everything happens on overtime shift. I'm working Charlie 2. I'm over there with the X Squad. And it's when you remember the Olympus over there.
Oh, yes.
North Point, right?
Yep. Mental health facility, Olympus. Yep,
that's. I know. So we're sitting there going around and, you know, alarm goes off. Olympus, zone, whatever. Okay. Well, and you hear the little panic in the voice about a minute later, the sergeant's over there and he's just going nuts on the radio. The inmate climbed the fence and jumped off. So he calls everybody over there. They're all out shotguns. And I look at the Charlie 1 and I'm like, is there anybody on their perimeter over there? Because I think he pulled everybody. So Charlie 1 shoots over there and he covers the perimeter. Of course, the A-team was going. They're inside the fence line. They go get this guy cuffed up, take him in Olympus Medical, right? And he's come to find out when he jumped off, he broke both his ankles. he was walking in between the fence line with broken ankles, and they're throwing him in the rocks. You know, it's not just cement, it's rocks in the middle of all that.
So there's two sets of fences.
Yep.
And he had scaled the inside fence, gotten over the razor wire, and then jumped down in between and landed on the rocks.
Correct. Yeah.
Oh my God. So how tall are those fences?
I think at least 12 foot. They're 12, I think.
Oh, they were 12, because now there's no fences. They're tearing down that whole complex.
Mm-hmm.
So he takes this dive over the razor wire, lands on there, breaks both of his ankles. I'm assuming that the staff, if I remember correctly, staff would have to go from the entrance to Olympus and walk on the rocks all the way around to wherever this guy was, right?
Yeah. They had that one, only the one gate, really, to get in there.
That's going to take a few minutes.
Yeah, it took a few minutes. He's in there walking down. Sergeant had everybody over there, had all their shotguns pulled, and it's like, okay, don't let him over the fence, but one shotgun would work.
Did he touch the outer fence? Did he ever touch it?
You know, I can't remember if he did. I don't think he did, because I think he was hurting pretty good. But he was up walking around, and
wow.
He wasn't following the sergeant's orders by any means. Yeah, they got him, threw him down, cuffed him up, took him in there, and I'm like, well, now we're going to the ER.
Dirk, what is the policy? Because I wouldn't know this, and I'm hoping you might know it. What's the policy of when you can use deadly force to prevent an escape? Where does the inmate have to be in relation to that second fence, that outer fence?
So technically, if I remember right, if they hit that outer fence, touch it in any way you could.
You could use deadly force.
Yes, but I don't think I ever told them that, because, I mean, they had three strands of razor wire to go through. If they made it to the razor wire, go ahead. But, I mean, usually people are there pretty quick from the inside and your A-teams, and the whole place goes crazy when people jump into there, even if they're supposed to be there, like maintenance.
Yeah. Well, and I know that like different animals would get hung up in that razor wire randomly, yes. Like a raccoon or something, and a raccoon will get cut up and it'll bleed out.
Yeah, raccoons. We had to call DWR once. We had a seagull that flew in it right over there on the Ochre 5 area.
Mm-hmm.
Had a seagull all tied up in there. So DWR came out because it's the state bird. Got to protect that thing.
The other thing people don't realize is when you see that wound up razor wire, it's wound pretty tight. And if you were to snip that stuff, if that starts to unwind, it's going to end up like a blender, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty ugly. That you get caught up in there and it like pulls in on you. Have you ever been in that?
No. The only time that I've ever gotten cut by razor wire is when I was working as a rover, either in the Ochres or maybe over there in Wasatch. It was one of the Charlie units that did the zone checks. Because every night you have to kind of do an audit to make sure all the zones and fences work properly. They checked it every single night. But over in Temp, it was the Temp rover that would do it.
Yes.
And so I had done it multiple times as the Temp rover. I had gone out there. And there are certain gates where you're really close to the razor wire, and I cut the top of my head with it. It just grazed me, but it is definitely razor wire.
Yeah, it's very sharp.
Yeah, if you get hung up on it, don't pull away from it real fast. It'll just slice right through your flesh.
Yeah, and it pulls more in on you. It's horrible. Kudos to those guys that get through it, and
they've earned their freedom. the towers. Let's talk about the towers for a minute. That was like one of my favorite overtime shifts, because when you're working over in Tower 5 over there by the Ochre Annex, after hours, that's where your switchboard operator gets transferred up there. So you get phone calls all throughout the night from, you know, girlfriends or wives or exes that are drunk that are calling to see how Johnny is, could you possibly talk to him? And I remember working up there, and I would get calls throughout the night, and people just wanted to ask all sorts of bizarre questions as they got progressively more drunk.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. Or it's people that just call up and want to ask questions about the prison.
Yeah, they just like get fascinated by it.
I'd always just transfer them to the shift commander, so it was easy.
See, and I'd try to find out who I didn't like that was working and then just start transferring to them. You know, fuck that asshole. Yeah. The guy that always is asleep, transfer it to him. But I know up in the tower, you know, your responsibility was fairly low, and I know that the perception of movies and television is like the person up there is diligently watching the fence line all night long.
Yep. But the secret, Mark, only if they're awake.
Only if they're awake. I don't know, Dirk, I don't know how somebody could sleep up in there. First of all, those towers were so old. The two tower, which is over the Uintas, and the five tower over the Ochres. It was just like when you went up in there, you just wanted to take a bath. It was like rolling around in old dirty clothes at DI.
Yeah.
It was fucking gross, man. Like,
yeah, and you know what? That's a pretty slobby people up in there too.
Oh yes. That was definitely a place where like antisocial personalities that are officers, you could stick them up there. And yeah, a lot of
we're scared inmates.
Yeah, that's true. And yeah, you stick a guy up in there and like, you know, 10 minutes into the shift, he's taking his uniform off and he's up there in his underwear with his balls hanging out. And he's sitting up there surfing the net, trying to figure out some way to search porn that IT won't be able to figure out. Masturbating.
On their personal laptop.
You know, remember the old days when like the movie theater used to have the sticky floor?
Oh, like my with, God, yes.
Okay. That I would rather lick the floor of a movie theater, a porn theater in New York, than to get anywhere near the floor in the tower. Because it's all officer semen up in those towers. That's all it is. If you turned on a black light in there, you'd walk out with a suntan. It's fucking gross, man. It's really gross.
Yeah. It's not the cleanest people either. I disciplined one of the guys because the new people on FTO, word got out about this guy, and they're like, I am not going up in that fucking tower with him. I'm like, yeah, you are. And they're like, no, we're not.
Oh, God.
Just stinky, dirty.
I mean, yeah, you go up there, and it's like you walk in, and the guy's like, hey, I'm sorry. I was trying to hold it for a long time, but I finally had to take a shit.
Yeah,
and you walk up in there, and it's like somebody's been belching their stoma.
Yeah,
it's disgusting. It's fucking gross. It's just, and it's all metal. It's fucking ice cold. You have a little space heater, like during the winter time, and when it gets real windy, like you can feel the whole tower sway.
Oh yeah, you can see the water in the bowl in the toilet bowl right there,
sloshing around.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you're getting these calls, but the thing is, you're making time and a half. If it's overtime, it's really not bad. But
yeah,
you know,
it wasn't too bad.
But, you know, you're right, Dirk. Like sometimes I would go up there and somebody that had to have a timeout because they got in trouble. So they got put into a tower for a while and you haven't seen them for a few months and you go up in the tower and they're unshaven. They've put on weight and it's like, hey, are you okay? Yeah, fine. I'll fucking see you in 12 hours. Fuck off.
Yep. Yeah, that's no shit.
I mean, if a guy's suicidal, do you really want to put him in a tower?
Yeah, sure. I just tell him, hey, the rope is right there.
How do you lock the windows so you know that they don't jump?
You don't. You help them. Here's how you open them. And the rope's right there. Tie it around the fucking toilet bowl and make sure it's tight.
So now that one tower that was back in the other corner on the Ochre side, they had that open for a while.
Yeah, Tower 4. Yeah. They opened Tower 4, and they opened Tower 3 for, like, what, a minute?
Why did they do that? What was the whole motivation?
They wanted a tower to watch over the access road between North and South Points, because we'd had a lot of people that would pull over on the Temp side, get on the access road, and drive over to Temp's because they're freaking GPS would say, hey, make a fucking right turn here and go down that. And, you know, the chase is on.
That's right. There was a while there where, like, just random people were starting to get on the police vehicle only road that connected to the North and South Point.
GPS, it turned, take them there.
That's crazy.
my one and only high speed chase around that perimeter on there from the access road, picking them up.
Who was it? So
Charlie 2 picks him up and I'm coming right behind him. So we get him and the fucker would not stop. Like, just pull over. Nope. He's got two cars behind him, lights, sirens are going fucking nuts. Goes past the UN, is about run somebody over at the UN gate because he don't stop. Get right there at Tower 1 and he turns up. Remember the old VDS there, which was where the sergeants used to do their reports.
Yeah.
And he turned up that road. I jumped the curb and I don't know, it felt like I tore the bottom out of the car, but I jumped the curb and blocked him in. God, he was like 96 years old or something. He's like, God, I just didn't know where the hell I was going.
Wow. Like,
fuck you, just pull over.
I never heard that story. When I did my overtime shifts in Charlie units, there was also a period where, okay, so you come on shift, you know, I'm not normally a Charlie unit, so I got to go to the control tower, and I got to go check out a weapon. I got to go check out a weapon, and a radio holster if I need it, and they'll lower it down. So you're standing at the base of the tower, and the person up in the tower, you press the button, the little intercom. Hey, what's up? Hey, this is DeWolf. I need to check out some equipment. I'm Charlie whatever tonight. Okay, hold on. And you hear like this little metal tub. All these memories are coming back, right, Dirk?
Yes.
And so they lower the thing. And then you hear it drop. You open up the door, and there you pull out your weapon. You pull out your holster. A box of rounds, of 59-millimeter rounds.
Yep.
And you make sure you got everything. You sign this little checkout sheet that you're signing for it. You put the sheet back in there, and hey, don't forget, that's my fucking pin. Make sure you give this pin back. Okay. And then, you know, he won't pull it up usually. He'll wait for the next person, then he'll, you know, pull it up or whatever. You use your ID, you scan in, you go into the building, into the locker room, you put all this gear on, and then you go outside, and you've got to put all of those rounds into your magazines. Now, here's
the
thing.
You load them every time.
You got to load them, and then you put your magazines in your holster, you charge your weapon, because they had a charging tube right there.
Yep.
You know, so if you have a misfire, it goes in the tube and you don't fucking blow out somebody's window in the parking lot. And then at the end of your shift, you have to go over and take out all of the bullets out of the magazines, put them back in the box and send them back up. And the whole reason that this became a big thing, and correct me if I'm wrong, Dirk, is because somebody turned in a box, or it used to be where they would just give you the magazines and they were fully loaded, but somebody like dropped a bullet in between the seat in the car and that's it. Okay. Here on out, you've got to account for every round at the beginning, at the end.
Yep. It got a little bit, they got really stupid with some stuff there for a while.
You know, a lot of times staff are managed the same way that inmates are managed.
Mm-hmm.
There's no difference between the way that we're managed and the inmates.
Yeah, because instead of taking it up with the fuck up, you freaking screw everybody.
Yeah, exactly. And so people don't understand that that's one of the biggest problems with corrections. And I think it's pretty typical no matter where you work, is when you have somebody that's a correctional officer and they've been a correctional officer for a while, then they become a sergeant, then they become a lieutenant. You haven't really trained them on how to work with people. You've only trained them to manage inmates, and that's all they know. They treat staff like they're all inmates, like they, you know.
Yeah, that's their management style.
That's it.
It's just what they're used to. So
I'm working as a Charlie unit, and you drive around the perimeter, you're looking at the fence, and you know, you see your friend that got off shift at 10, and you stop and you bullshit for a few minutes. And then I know that some of the other random duties that had to be done would be like a perimeter check of the Fred House Academy and the administration building. That was on night shift.
Yeah, right? we done them during the day too. One of the sergeants went up there and they just drive around, especially on weekends, just to check. Of course, we always had that alarm going off up there for a while. What was that, a high water pressure freaking alarm or something?
Oh, I don't know about that.
Yeah, you figure maintenance would fix it after the 800th time, but no. They'd just stick some more gum on it and call it good.
We're going to be moving here in a few years. Don't worry about it.
Yep, no kidding.
I know that they had to do that. And then I'm trying to think what are there some of the other random responsibilities. The log that she kept on external security up in the tower was just kind of like a paper log, anything unusual. And if you're working Tower 5, like I was saying earlier, you know, you get phone calls from the outside and occasionally you might have to transfer the call to the shift commander. But for the most part, call back during normal business hours. Now, Tower 2 is a little bit different.
Yeah, that had the UNA gates. They used to be able to kind of go in and check, but then we had somebody that moved in. He probably listened to your podcast. He'll know exactly who I'm talking about. Mr. Policy said, no, everybody in and out needs to be checked by a Charlie unit. You remember that when that shit came down?
Yeah.
Push those fucking buttons and shift change is just, we'd post somebody there because you had to go there and check everybody in and freaking out.
I remember this. So if you're working in Tower 2, you're the one that controls the gates to go into the maximum security unit, which is death row, your gang unit, all of that's in UNAs, and receiving an orientation UNA 5. The tower controls the gates. So if somebody comes in to say visit and they pull up to the closest they can park and they get out and they walk up to the gate, at this time period, a Charlie unit has to come over and check their ID before they can go in or come out.
Yep, correct. Tower 2 called down, say, hey, we got you in a gate traffic. You'd go over there as fast as you wanted to and check them, and then you'd have to clear them and say they're clear, and he'd pop them through the gates.
Yep, yeah, he would wave, hey, this one's good, this one, you know, fine, whatever. These people, whoever would be staff, visitors, the chaplain, whatever, they go in to do their business, and then Tower 2 can go back to sleep. Now, Tower 2, the other thing about for the longest time, it was just like such a great shift. But again, something happened, and I'm assuming it's somebody fucked up, where you had to do like, do you remember when this took place, Dirk? There was a time period where they said, no, we need to make sure that staff are okay and alert. And what that's code for is that staff are not fucking sleeping.
Yep.
So they would do like a security check and they would go through every different unit, every housing unit, external security, and they'd say something and you would have to acknowledge them.
Yeah. What was it? They said the control tower did it.
Was it
watch checks? and when it first fucking started out, Mark, Wasatch, your checks, and you go through and, you know, a east, a west, blah, blah, blah. But remember when they first started that, everybody was trying to get on and all at the same freaking time. There was no organization, no, hey, let's start here and go A to B to C to D on all the units. You win a one, you win a two. There was none of that. It was just like everybody was stomping all
a free for
on the
all.
Radio. And
you always had that cunt that had to like be the first one. So normally with any rational human being, if you have Wasatch and you have A East, A West, Baker Block, Charlie Block, Delta Block, what would the normal transition be or the normal progression? Watch
cluster,
check.
Clusterfuck, Mark. That's what it's called.
Well, so normally anybody that would like have any common sense, watch check Wasatch, A East, A West, Baker Block, Charlie. Right. You know, you would just know. But when it first started out, don't block.
Yeah.
Charlie, Baker Block. And it was just like that. It was just a constant, you know, everybody trying to fucking one up the next guy. But the other thing that staff tried to do, and of course the watch commander, I'm sure, had to step in and say no, is you have one guy designated. So it's like Wasatch, watch check, A, B, C, D, E, F. Okay, 10-4. It's like one guy responds for all of them. You know, and it's like, no, you can't fucking do that.
That's not going to work.
No. And so they tried to pull a fast one and it's like, no. So back to Tower 2, let me finish up saying what I was going to say about Tower 2. Tower 2 is a little different than Tower 5. Tower 5 had the outside calls coming in. Tower 2 had to do check-ins from the hospital.
Uh-huh.
And so the hospital, you know, to make sure that they're okay, they would call in every hour. Well, when I was up there, it was like every 2 hours, 2.5 hours, 3 hours. And if they didn't check in, you had to call up there on their cell phone and say, hey, are you okay?
Yep.
So you had
and
that.
And if they didn't answer, then they called the freaking Charlie One. It'll be like, hey, we're not getting anybody.
Right.
Fuck.
Yeah. Somebody's asleep up at the U.
So you call up the head doctor and say, will you go wake my guy up?
Did you really?
No.
I'm like, you call the fucking doctor, like the surgeon? Hey, could you put down that scalpel and go find my officer? So, but I know that, so you were taking phone calls from the hospital, but you also had the gate traffic. Now, you couldn't fall asleep as easy in Tower 2. Because the watch commander at some point is going to come over to the UNAs and go want to visit with his buddies.
Yep.
So if he's sitting there at the gate pressing the button for you to open up the gate and you're not answering.
He might just walk up there.
He might climb up the, well, they probably wouldn't. They call and say, the fuck's going on up there? You okay?
Yeah. Are you awake?
Did I ruin your beauty sleep, asshole?
Yeah. And you hear, oh, no, go ahead.
Somebody just woke up and they're trying to go, yeah, no, I'm good. Do you remember Oakley?
I do, yeah.
Now, Oakley, I think that he was the watch commander that was going into the UNAs, and whoever was up in the tower had those little laser pointers and pointed it at Oakley, put it on his chest, the little laser.
Oh, now, God, I don't remember that.
And so none of the weapons that are in the towers had a laser on it. Apparently, Oakley didn't know that because he didn't think that was really. I mean, I think he laughed about it later, but he's like, fuck, don't do that. Are you fucking crazy?
Yeah.
You know, because you're looking up at a tower and there's this red laser coming down and it's pointed at your heart. That's fucked up. I like that.
Yeah.
That's something I would do. It's the same sort of thing with the Tower 5. Like 90% of the inside of that place is covered in semen. It's really gross. It's really grungy. It's just nasty. Like when you sit down, you just want to, like, you got to go home and take a shower. It's so gross.
Yeah. I know if I ever did overtime up in there, my first hour was cleaning.
It's like trying to polish a turd. it's so gross, man. The other thing is like occasionally if there was like special events or if you guys were doing meals and you would call up to the tower guy if you liked him and said, hey, are you hungry? We got extra hot dogs or whatever the case may be.
Uh-huh.
And the guy up there was like, fuck yeah, man. Yeah. Send me up a box lunch or whatever. And so you'd have a milk crate on a rope that hung out the window.
Yeah, I'll take a styro.
Yeah, exactly. And so you're up there in the tower and you're hoisting this thing and the wind's blowing it and it's going way out. And you're like, oh, God, I hope my styro doesn't tip over in this. And you pull it up.
Yeah, you'd think in the year 2000 they'd come up with something a little better than a rope and a fucking milk crate. But, I mean, hey.
It worked.
It did work.
And climbing up those towers, man, that little spiral slippery staircase. It had a handrail, but when you're going up and down, well, up was the big thing. When a lot of times when the staff got to the top of the tower, and you know a lot of the staff that worked at the prison, by the time they got to the top of the tower.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Oh, my God. Oh, I'm not used to that. Well, you were here this morning. You relieved me this morning. Oh, yeah, that's right.
Oh, I know, right?
Oh, my God.
Hey, Mark. I only did that a couple times, and then I decided to start working out a little bit.
You're like, I got to be a sarge. I can't keep doing this.
Fuck yes.
Wasn't there also a time period where, like, they started to insist that the sergeants spend so much time up there or something? Or you had to visit on your
every
shift?
Every fucking tower, every shift.
You had to go up there and go check in.
Yep. Make sure everything was good. Maybe do a check. Make sure the guns, you know, the magazine hasn't fallen out or somebody racked around in the freaking chamber playing around. Because remember, Tower 2 had the gun go off. There was a bullet. Well, there were bullet holes in 5 and 2.
Yeah. Well,
and enforcement tower, people fucking with the guns.
Could you imagine being up there in the tower and you have that H and K, right?
It was H&K.
H&K, and you're like, oh, look at that. Look, oh, the safety's not on. I better not. Oh, shit. God, did you blow a hole right through it?
You imagine how loud that was in there?
Oh, that would scare the shit out of me. There were several incidents of misfire over the years where somebody was like just checking how many rounds. I don't know how they did it, but they had the safety off and they blew off one of the guns inside the tower.
Yep.
And
Tower 2 had a couple bullet holes through it that were still there. They repaired the roof, but left the hole in the ceiling. Okay.
Oh, man.
Tower 5 had a couple.
You know, the one thing about the towers that I don't think a lot of people talk about is that every time that I would go up there, like I, you know, would randomly pull shifts. But let's say that in June I pull a shift and it's like, oh, look at this. They got a brand new, you know, set of binoculars up here. These are nice. And then I do a shift in August and every time those fuckers were broken.
Yeah. I don't know why. Yeah. I had my own pair.
But I mean, it doesn't matter what the tower would get. It would be like 60 days or less. They're fucking whatever it is. It's broken.
Well, yeah, because they'd put like anybody on a utility would cover. It was rotating constantly of just brand new freaking people all the time that they didn't trust inside. Here, climb up the tower and have a weapon. Okay.
And don't masturbate because DeWolf gets mad at the floor sticky.
Don't be doing that.
God, but yeah.
Tower 2. Speaking of loud and the gun going off, we had that one officer he called down. It was raining and all thunder. And all of a sudden, boom, this crack. And it like make you almost shit right there, right? Tower 2 calls me down. He's like, Charlie 1, can you call me? And so I call up there. He's like, and he's screaming into the phone. And I'm like, yeah, are you okay? He's like, the fucking tower just got hit. I can't hear a fucking thing. Got hit by lightning. Do you remember that?
No.
Hit the tower with lightning. And he's like, that was the loudest. And, you know, it's like an aluminum can in there anyway. Just rattling around. He's like, God, yeah, I can't. They sent him to the doctor. I can only imagine. But I got hit by lightning. And he called down. He's almost deaf.
Well, I was gonna say, he comes down on the top of his head smoking.
God. But I mean, the towers are the tallest thing out there. I could see it. I don't know how it didn't happen more than once.
I'll bet it did. Now, I don't know if this happened before you started there, because you started in 97, right?
At 98.
98, okay.
Yeah.
This probably was 97, but there was an officer in the control tower who died in the tower.
Yeah, I heard about that.
I was working UNF5 the night the guy died. And so, of course, we just hear like random radio traffic. And this is a long time ago. It's 97. Everything was really creepy because like nobody was saying what was going on. But at one point you heard the shift commander, and I think it was Hayes, and he sounded like he was running and giving instruction over the radio. But it was like we could hear it on our channel, or we'd switched over to the Wasatch channel or something. But that guy was up in the tower and he died. And I think his name may have been Cox, but
I don't know. There's been a lot of Coxes out there. So
there's a lot of Cox in my life, but you had me at Cox, Dirk.
Yeah, so, I know.
So what that was is we watched from the back dock of UNF5. They had to get a fire truck, raise it up, because he was dead on top of the door to get up into the actual the tower where he sits with all the computers. He was in the chair dead. And I guess he was a heavy guy and he smoked up there. Like he would open up the window and smoke.
Right.
And but a heavy guy. So they had to actually take his body out through the window with the fire truck to get him out.
Yeah, that's what I heard too. Right out those front windows.
Oh, God. And crazy. I remember the name of the officer that had to climb through the window to get him. But, God, I can't remember his name. God, and I got a great story because he was outside security, and I think he was a sergeant. But I remember one time, this is kind of like a side story, but I got to tell you this. Okay. I remember I had some gay porn mags in my trunk, and I was going through VDS. This is no shit. This is true. And I remembered because they had to open my trunk, okay?
Right.
And so I'm pulling out. And he's like, he gets out to go check my trunk. And I pop the trunk. And I'm like, oh, fuck, those magazines are back there. And he was back there for like a minute or two. Now, I don't know if he was like, you know, checking the models out, or if he was like, why does he have those magazines? That's weird. He didn't say anything. He just came back and kind of gave me that look like, I don't know about you, Dwarf. But yeah, what was his name?
Was that before or after you come out?
I don't remember. I really don't remember. I don't. You know, maybe everybody knew because of that. And when I thought I was coming out, it's like, fuck, we all know, stupid. But So those are the towers. And then you had the towers over at North Point, and yep. Those were newer, a lot newer. And
The oldest one was at the property building right up above property,
which was not really a tower though. That was connected to like a conference room, and
yeah,
it was utilized as a tower, but you had that controlled the gate coming out of Temp.
Correct. Yeah.
And then you had the tower over by what, Promontory?
Yeah, they had the one at Promontory, and then they had one on, was it Lone Peak?
The one that controlled the Temp gates. Is that the one you're talking about?
Yeah, that was the new one.
Okay.
And then they built that other new one on the north or south end of the Lone Peak right there that was monitoring the access road because they closed down, what was it, Tower 3?
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of towers. Hey, and you know what? They were only millions of dollars and they just tore them down, so.
Well, yeah, that's crazy. So as far as external security, the tower shift, pretty much anybody could do.
Uh-huh.
But you had to be certified with a shotgun and the H&K and the 9mm, right, to work the tower, or just the two rifles?
Just the rifles. You could get away with just the rifles, but I mean, everybody out there had to qualify on the handgun and shotgun and AR, right?
Yeah, they're supposed to.
Some people
struggled, you know, yearly certification on those. So the towers were easy gigs. I never liked working VDS. So when you pull in from the frontage road and you pull into Wasatch parking lot, which is the Oakers, Wasatch, Uintas, that guy really kind of had to know what he's doing.
Yep.
Because you're going to get visitors, you're going to get people visiting the prison, you're going to get attorneys. And so you really have to know what you're doing in order to let people on prison property.
Yeah, it gets a little bit chaotic, and you had incoming and outgoing running both at the same time.
So anybody coming to work or coming to Wasatch, Oakers, Uintas, there was one, maybe two guys. I know the Charlie units would assist if he was getting overwhelmed, he or she's getting overwhelmed. That I did not like working that post. Like, I remember I had to cover it a few times because somebody had to go run and do something, but I did not like being in that post because there's just too much risk if you don't know what you're doing, letting the wrong person in, or God forbid, the wrong person out. But
yeah, and you know, and they have to deal with an abundance of personalities.
Oh,
all at
yeah.
At the same time, you know, it can be just nice and smooth on visiting days, or it can just go to hell in a handbag in like a second. Like, I mean, that's the only place that I was working and helping out with that, you know, some freaking nutty bitch called 911 on me.
What? Why?
Because we weren't letting her in, because I can't even remember why, but we turned her around and she came up, and on the way out, she wouldn't pop her trunk and wouldn't do this. So she finally popped her trunk and just kept going. I'm like, ma'am, you just need to leave. You just need to leave. We're going to have police come down. We'll trespass you. God kept going and kept going. So she pulled about 100 yards up and then just pulled over. I walk up there. I'm like, this fucking officer's here right now. He's threatening to take me out. I'm like, what? What are you freaking talking about? And she's talking to 911, telling him I'm going to yank her out of the freaking car. I'm like, okay, well, whatever. Get the police down here because I'm getting ready to call them anyway to get you out of here. So just happened to be one of the guys that I went through the LEO portion with. I'm like, really? Can you just get her freaking out of here and tell her not to ever come back?
Was she trying to visit?
I can't even remember. Just something freaking stupid. But yeah, called 911 on me. That was awesome. Haven't had that done since my ex-wife.
Wow. Let's talk about the hospital for a minute, Dirk.
Okay.
You get guys, guys or girls that end up at the hospital. You could just tell by the way people react if you have an inmate. And if it's an emergency situation, like somebody's going to go into labor, God forbid, if there's a birth defect, that family is going to sue the prison.
Mm-hmm.
And if they say, oh, well, they didn't transport them immediately, or they didn't handle it, or there was a big thing with transports and pregnant females. I remember that.
Yes. In fact, I wrote a long freaking memo and ran it up the chain for, you know, accusing them of a few things. Because, Mark, they sent up a freaking lady. She's okay. So we get the call real quick. We get the call. Nope, she's got to go freaking right now. She's ready to freaking calve out. I mean, it's all but freaking coming out, right? So we go, ambulance gets there, boom, we've got our people. They go up there, they're code 3 all the way to the hospital. So we get up there, they say, hey, we're coming back. Like, you've only been up there like, I don't know what, 5 hours. And that's just short, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It, you know, Mark, she wasn't even pregnant.
I was working that night in temp. She was in my building.
So you know what I'm talking about.
I remember.
She wasn't. And our medical said she was in freaking forced labor, ready to calve out any freaking minute. So you're dressing out to go to the ambulance with her in Tyvek, because you never know if it's going to be a bloodbath. And she wasn't even pregnant. How do you freaking mess that up so bad?
Okay, so here's what I heard. And I don't know, but I heard that, like, medical didn't have any documentation that she was pregnant, but they could not confirm or deny. So they, just to be safe, we better send her. They were just nervous. When she came back to temp, when she came back into the housing unit and I got to escort her in, I'm like, oh my God, you look amazing. You really have that glow of a mother. You really do. Is it a boy or a girl? Nobody's told me anything. She wouldn't even look at me. I could tell she was like, go fuck yourself. I had so much fun with that, but I knew people were going to be mad the next day. The Monday morning quarterbacks that ran that place were going to be super mad about this taking place. But yeah, they transported her and she wasn't even pregnant. That's crazy.
Yeah, that is crazy.
That's fantastic.
I mean, though, do they, you know, it's like, oh, when you do, if you ever said that and you weren't pregnant, you'd get slugged, right?
Oh.
Do they not even ask, hey, you know, just, are you even pregnant? Did well, she look pregnant? I don't know.
Okay. So she wasn't exactly anorexic, Dirk. Okay. I'm that's probably why medical is confused. She was thick. Okay. She was thick, but the other thing is that she was not, and I know a lot of people are incarcerated. They don't have access to a lot of things that people have on the outside to make themselves look amazing. And of course, people, when you're incarcerated, you don't have access to those things. She was not a looker. Okay. And so that was confusing too. I'm like, there's somebody for everyone. That's for sure with this.
Pleat, where you at?
But, yeah, this is true.
I shouldn't say that.
And that was on an earlier episode. We've actually talked about him. So, okay, at the hospital, as far as the transport, you know, you see everybody running around. And of course, in situations like this person that we're talking about, who was clearly 10 months pregnant,
yeah,
that had to go up there and give birth. In other situations where, like, let's say you have a fight, because I had talked with somebody a while ago that had to watch an inmate that had gotten in a very severe fight. And I think it was in the Oakers. The guy ended up, they were going to life flight him because his skull was pretty mashed up.
Uh-huh.
And they ended up calling off life flight because the guy died. But in situations where life flight's going to take him because the guy's going to expire, tell me about how that is handled from external security.
Okay, so that's a total cluster in its own right.
I'll bet.
Because you get the call, hey, life flight's coming in. We were responsible, the Charlie units, outside enforcement, to set up the landing zone.
Okay.
You know, it's pretty hard when you've got like 8 new guys, right? Like, hey, just you go park here and you park here, shine your lights in that way. And I'm going to be right here because you got to send it up in a triangle. And there's a specific little way you're supposed to do it. So the helicopter knows which way to come in and check the wind. And it can be pretty, pretty nutty. And Lifelight gets there pretty quick when they're called. So it's like, they land just outside the Uintas. Remember between Wasatch and Uintas, they had that big grassy area there that they would land. And they'd wheel them out of Wasatch right down across the parking lot and load them in that helicopter. But I only had one of those. We set up for two, but they canceled the one. It might be the dead guy you're talking about.
Yeah.
And they canceled one. So
They wheel the guy out. Does the Charlie unit go in the helicopter with the guy?
They do. Usually everybody wants to go on the helicopter, right? But there's a weight limit. And they're all but maxed out. So usually the little guys got to go in the helicopter just because of a weight limit.
Okay.
We took the littler ones, you know, these great big 300 pounders. We're like, and there's not a lot of room in there. By the time you get the pilot and all them and the medics in there with the gurney, there is not a lot of room in those helicopters.
All right.
Send somebody little up in there if we could.
Okay. So somebody goes on the life flight, they go to the hospital. So it's just one person with the inmate.
One person with the inmate. And we have like a chase car that will go up because you got to have two people with the inmate, right?
Mm-hmm,
transport with two.
Yep.
So we'd call up and we'd send a guy up on his way to the U in the chase car chasing the helicopter. And we'd call the UMC. They had a rover, you know, that would pop people out for bathroom breaks. And we'd say, hey, we got life flight coming in. You need to go meet him. So he would be the second guy as soon as they got there.
Okay.
And then when the car got up there, he would relieve the rover to go do whatever the rover did, hang out at the morgue or I don't know.
I never knew that that's what transpired with external security and life flight. I did not know that.
Yeah, it was actually a little form that we had to keep. It was in the Charlie units. And nobody ever used them. They'd always get thrown away, but on how to set it up down there.
With a regular ambulance run, tell me about how that's normally like with a transport.
Yeah, so you get word that the ambulance is coming, blah, blah, blah. It could be code 3 or whatever. So we'd set a Charlie unit up, VDS, to escort them in. And so that the ambulance didn't have to stop while VDS was checking other cars. And they'd just clear it. They'd go around, meet up. They'd bring the inmate out, put him in the ambulance. One guy would go in the ambulance with, you know, whoever was going there.
Uh-huh.
And the second guy would follow in the chase car. Another thing people really don't know is that pregnant females, and I don't know if you remember this, pregnant females never got restrained. They cut out the restraints on pregnant females. So that was the biggest issue I had with that freaking inmate that wasn't pregnant is she went freaking outside the fence line. No shackles, no handcuffs, nothing.
Well, I mean, the good thing is that Dirk's, that girl couldn't run a couple of blocks without being totally winded.
That's true. But the officer that went up with her probably couldn't either.
I don't even know what to say to that.
I don't know.
I don't know what to say to that.
Yeah, I don't know. Was it you?
No, I was in the unit waiting for her to come back to give her a hard time to see how her babies were. But
yeah, but that happened more than once. Hey, we took up a violent freaking gang member too that was supposedly pregnant. I don't know if you remember that. It was right around the same time. There's two or three of them.
Wow.
She was pregnant though. I mean, we got to give her that. But I mean, she was an escape risk and freaking everything.
I'm sure.
Like, okay, should we put like at least shackles on her? No, what if she has to freaking have it right here? Like, well.
As we were discussing this episode prior to us actually recording it, you had worked an incident where there was more than one transport. And I'm talking about the situation where guys over in the Uintas were making...
Uintas.
They were making brew, alcohol. They got botulism poisoning from their process. Shocking. And a bunch of them ended up at the university... And it was national news.
Two of them. I should have freaking died. I don't even know. They were up there for months, but yeah, that was crazy.
Wasn't also like the federal government came in to investigate that because it was botulism?
You know, I don't know because we had so many people up there that the entire enforcement had to take like two shifts a week or something in overtime to cover that place. Cause they, on that one, they did cut it down to one inmate for every, three inmates for every guy or person or something. I can't
for every
remember.
Officer.
But it used to be a one-on-one, remember?
Yeah.
Every inmate had to have a guy with them and then the rover.
Well, especially and if they're UNA inmates.
It was a long month.
So it was
a lot of overtime.
But they all recovered.
The one was pretty bad off, like he had brain issues or something, so he'll never be the same again. There was two of them that were really bad. But
wow. That was a really big deal. I can just imagine, like, the doctor saying, you know, like, this one right here, you know, he's got neurological issues. He's very slow to speak. He can't hold up his own head. Oh, that's my boss. That's not an oh, sorry.
Oh, are you talking about a captain? No. Hey, let me go on a cruise.
That's our director.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was probably the most extreme, would you say, in the period that you were working external security, was that many inmates up?
Yeah. Yeah, because it went crazy, you know, when we had, like, four or five inmates up there. It was like, oh my God, now we need two rovers, right? Anything over three, we had to have two rovers. It was just massive amounts of overtime with the U, and but hey, we all got through it.
The Charlie units, of course, they do all the outside. You got the tower officers, you've got the control tower, you've got the VDS.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything that I'm missing from outside security?
No, I think that's it. What, North Point, they had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 units at North Point. We had two on South Point.
It was
VDS and then the towers.
One guy was assigned to Promontory and he stayed over there. You were isolated all night. You just sat in the truck and drove around and responded to any alarm. Did Lone Peak have its own, or Lone Peak and Temp were together?
No, Lone Peak had its own. They'd sit right there for the gate.
Oh, so, because the UCI workers or whatever.
The UCI workers. So he was constantly in and out of those gates and would do alarms also, you know.
Lone Peak was the only unit that had inmates that actually were released from the prison to go to work with a boss, a UCI supervisor, to go to work sites.
Yeah, even off property. Remember the Flame? It used to be the Flame and Goes, right?
The Flame and Goes, and then Bullfrog Spas, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And then they did some work up at the Capitol.
Yeah.
There's a story
they
there.
Did
I
do
know
some work up at the Capitol. That's a whole nother story, right?
A couple of staff got themselves in trouble up there. Is there any other things that I'm missing about external security, or does that pretty much?
I think that pretty much covers it. We did have the North Gate that we worked with, but they were kind of part of internal. But we worked with them a lot, and we covered the North Gate on weekends.
When there is a murder inside the prison and you start having investigators come in from Salt Lake County, is there anything different on how that's handled, like controlling who comes in and goes out? Because that becomes a big deal. I know that we've talked about this. You were working with the murder on Dog Block.
Yep.
And so...
And you just sat up there, of course, everybody's coming down and everybody shows up for that. Enforcement, basically, they'd try to keep a log of who was there, what times they come in, and blah, blah, blah. You know, fire department's on scene, ambulances on scene. All of those would have to be covered by an outside unit, you know, an outside agency, because you can't investigate yourself, right?
Right.
So you'd have usually a sheriff's department. Unified did a couple of them, and they would get escorted in. Of course, you got to make sure they don't take their guns in, because they're not used to going inside secure perimeters. Keep track of all that and just wait.
Speaking of weapons inside, did you ever have in your time period a staff forget and go in and with their gun on?
All the time, Mark.
And what was the normal protocol? What would happen disciplinary?
Well, speaking from experience, I only took the bullets in.
Okay.
I wasn't working enforcement at the time, but yeah, I got a verbal warning or something like that.
First offense.
But I mean, it happens, but I've been all the way down into the infirmary with my gun on, and somebody will come tap you and be like, oh, hey, I got to go to my truck. You good for a minute? Yeah. And you just walk out.
Gotcha.
90% of them probably don't even get reported. But if somebody catches you, you better tell the sergeant or you better tell somebody, because the rumor mill is big out of the prison.
Sure.
Yeah. I seen what's his fucking nuts come in, had his gun on and shit, all his SWAT gear. And like, what?
And I don't know if you remember this story, and it wasn't external security for our place, but a transport unit from a jail brought an inmate in, and the officer that was doing the transport, I guess in the driver's seat, the weapon fell out of her holster. It went right into the property bag of the inmate. So they brought the inmate in with their property. And so the officer starts going through the property, and the first thing they find is a handgun, a loaded handgun that was the deputy's.
Nice.
Yeah. That's awkward.
Yeah, that's really awkward.
Well,
I'm glad I wasn't part of that.
Well, and again, it wasn't anything to do with the prison staff. This was a county employee.
Right.
So just kind of
random. They're supposed to be checked before they even go in, like at Northgate. Mm-hmm. You know, when they go into Northgate, hey, you got your weapon. Make sure everything's done. Check their trunks, right? They even had to pop all the freaking hoods.
Okay, so now this was a temp. This happened at temp women.
Oh, okay.
Because they bring them right in through the front gate, right?
Yes, they do.
I don't know that anybody checked their vehicle because they walked them in right through the front gate.
Yep, no. Walk them right in. But the checkpoint should have caught that. You're supposed to, hey, are you clear? Before you send them down into the secure perimeter, right?
When they ask me that, are you clear? I'd say, oh, no, I came out of the closet in 2001. No, clear, you dumb fuck. Not clear.
No, let me check your gun. I always checked when I worked at Control Point. Hey, you got your gun? Let me see. Look at the empty holster or whatever.
Sure.
Or you go like, hey, I need you to step back out for a minute. Hey, set the inmate down there. Can I talk to you? Yeah. Hey. Go freaking dump your stuff off. So, I mean, it happens fairly often, honestly.
Did you ever have any interest in transportation, Dirk?
No.
Going back to 98 when you started, transportation, of course, there was a multi-step difference between an officer and a transport officer or an officer in SWAT.
Yes, they got two steps.
I understand with the SWAT guys, they would do just massive amounts of training and they would lift weights all day and train and train and train. The transportation guys, when I first started working at the prison, a lot of those guys were fucking dicks.
Yeah.
And if you're a former transport officer and you listen to this podcast and you're gritting your teeth, I'm sorry, but back in the day, you guys were cunts. You were total fucking cunts. You really thought you were hot shit.
They did, and just entitled, and fuck. I was like, I do the same shit you do, you know?
I don't know if you know this, but when I was like the first year at the prison, I went and I interviewed for transportation. I just remember the vibe just in the interview was probably like, I don't think I want to work with these guys, because they were just dicks in the interview.
Yes. Yeah. But and you know what? My whole time through APMP, I spent with a transportation guy, and yeah, we're good friends now, but I freaking still dick with him. Fucking transportation, you worthless fuckers.
It was such a weird shift because when, you know, you and I were used to working 12-hour shifts, you come in 6 to 6, whether it's like, you know, night shift or day shift.
Uh-huh.
The transport guys, depending on where they had to transport to in the state, they had very weird hours, and they're not done until they're back from whatever they had to do.
Right. You may not come in till 10 in the morning, but you're driving down from St. George after court at 8 o'clock at night. So yeah,
long days driving, but they really thought they were hot shit. They thought they were better than SWAT.
Like, I carry a gun too, and I know how to drive a car.
Yeah, they had like their own FTO program, and
they did,
and they were
pretty extensive.
Yeah, and they're very, very critical of the people that are trying to be part of their team.
But I guess enforcement was kind of that way too. It was kind of a big deal. It was before I got there, but I was like, okay.
See, and I always like the transport guys, or sorry, the external security guys. that I always worked with, like doing overtime and stuff, you know, especially because I was pretty easy going and I would work overtime shifts. And it's right. like, hey, do you want me to do this? No, DeWolf, you're fine. Just don't worry about it, man. We'll take care of this. We got this. And they were always really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Transportation, not so much. They just thought they were hot shit. And I'm like, yeah. You're a glorified taxi. Fucking show your calm your tits.
Look, I know you got two different handcuff keys. So what? Yeah, they had the two sets of handcuffs. So if they had one key, they couldn't. They always would do like two sets or something. I don't know, but
they have like a special key or something.
Right? Yeah.
So you get an extra key and you don't know when the fuck you're coming to work or when you're getting off. And so right? you get all this money. Fuck you.
Yeah, you can have it. Enjoy it.
But, you know, Steve Anderson was a nice guy.
Steve Anderson was a nice guy, and that was very tragic. That was a bad day. Bad day for corrections.
Were you working outside security when that took place?
I was not. I was actually in UNA 3, and actually I was taking inmates down to the, you know, the UNA holding cells down there.
Mm-hmm.
And that guy talked to him that morning and walked down with the freaking ass wipe. What was his name? Mr. Freaking Tat Face.
Al Geyer.
I can't remember. Oh, yeah. But what people don't know is Curtis Allgaier, he was a pretty easy guy to get along with. He was just a dick.
I'm sure I interacted with him doing overtime shifts in the UNAs. I don't remember him at all.
Yeah, never had a problem with him. He was always cordial. Hey, how you doing? Blah, blah, blah. And then to hear that on the news, it's like, what the? Yeah, that was crazy. It was a crazy day.
Now, let me ask you this. Have you ever heard about years earlier there being a report about Allgaier talking about trying to escape during a transport?
Uh-huh.
There is a report out there where it was reported years earlier that Allgaier was going to attempt this or had been talking about doing this.
Yep.
And it was reported to a particular staff that's no longer alive, and it was in the system, but unfortunately it got lost in the shuffle, and then Anderson ended up doing that transport alone, solo.
Yes.
And the whole reason that that whole thing unfortunately took place, because it was an MRI, had to take off the hard restraints, the metal restraints, and put on soft restraints in order for Allgaier to go into the machine, correct?
Yes.
I just know that there's a report out there, Coud.
Oh.
Lieutenant Coud, right?
I don't know who took the report, but I did hear about it.
And Coud passed away.
It detailed almost exactly how it went down, too. It
was
Wow. Very crazy.
Well, that's all I've got for external security. You're the man. You tell me if I've missed anything.
I don't think so, except, you know, you could always identify the Charlie units, because remember, the left arm was always pitch black.
Yeah, you got a better tan. Well, unless you're on graveyard shift.
Yeah, unless you're on graveyard shift, yep. Well, you could always tell the Charlie unit. Outside enforcement, gotcha.
Do you miss any part of it?
You know, I really liked outside enforcement, which is probably why I did so long, because I could be as busy or as not as I wanted to, as the sergeant especially, you know. And it was just a pretty chill gig that I really enjoyed. And a lot of people didn't like it. A lot of people wouldn't want to freaking work. Oh, I got to work out. Yeah, it's pretty simple. And I don't know, it was good. I give you one story and we'll see if you've heard of this story or not. So I'm getting off. The relief is there. And I'm going up, and this freaking dumb fuck, he gets out of the car, right? Because we got to do a pass down.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you got so many at the U, blah, blah, blah. So this fucking guy gets out, and what's the first words out of his mouth? Hey, Dirk, how do you get a gay guy to have sex with a woman?
I know this one.
Yeah, I know. Remember, Mark? Because it was you.
I was gonna say, do you know whose joke that is?
I don't.
It's Gilbert Gottfried.
Oh, God.
And do you know who told me that joke?
Uh-uh.
Tony Kishlish.
Oh, my God.
That
really?
Was one of his favorite jokes. And, of course, he loved using it on me. And it's, how do you make a gay guy have sex with a woman? You stuff her cunt full of shit. I do remember that. Now that you bring that up, I do remember that. Tony loved that joke. That was his favorite Gilbert Gottfried joke.
That joke, Mark, traumatized me my whole life.
You know,
it was the first words out of your mouth. You got out of that little tiny Honda, that Honda Civic that, I don't know what, you chopped it to the ground or something. And then, you know, you at 6'25" freaking climbs out of this thing.
Right. Right.
And the first word out, hey, Dirk. I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah, I had to be as offensive as possible right at the very beginning of the shift.
Yeah, I loved it. You were always good, though. You were always good.
And a lot of people don't know this, but I officiated your wedding to you and Emily.
You did, yes.
And I got to tell that story real quick. I'm glad that you brought these other stories up because I would have forgotten. Years and years and years ago, you had hit me up and you'd said, hey, you know, I really want you to officiate our wedding. I really didn't take you seriously, Dirk. I had no comprehension as to why you would want me to officiate your wedding, but I was like, sure, yeah, absolutely, whatever you need. And then it was like two years later, you're like, hey, we've set a date.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wait a minute. Like, wait, he's being like, serious.
You're fucking serious?
Yeah. And you're like, yeah, no, we've set the date and it's this and that, mm-hmm. and here's the venue. And man, all of a sudden I got a pucker factor. Like, wait, this guy really wants me to officiate his wedding.
Yeah. And remember, you go, I'm not a freaking priest or nothing. And I'm like, don't worry about it. Here's the website. Just go get your certificate. Remember?
Yeah. And I went on there and I went through the very difficult process online.
Right.
To become a minister.
Yeah.
And I said, yeah, but I had told you, like, look, you got this all wrong. I'm not a priest. I just got raped by one when I was a kid, but I'm not one. I've got a little bit of priest in me. That's not what I meant, though. I'm not, like, you know, part of the clergy. It's just because I was raped by a priest. That's all, Dirk. It's okay, Mark. You can still pull it off. Well, okay. Let's do this.
And it was stellar. You were amazing.
And I was a fucking nervous wreck the whole
time. That's what I heard.
Well, I mean, it's just because it's like your family's there. And there's this standard for me that it's like, of course, this is going to create memories for the rest of you and Emily's life, but your whole family's there. I cannot fuck this up.
And you didn't. You're okay. Amazing.
Well, no, and I appreciate that. But yeah, it was one of those things where somebody that entrusts me to do something so amazing for them, it's very high priority. It's very cool. And I appreciate that you gave me that opportunity.
Yeah, it was great. I couldn't think anybody better to do that. Well, and you know, Melissa was my best man.
Yes, yes. I remember. Yeah. I remember the venue and I remember everybody that was there. I'm sure you have lots of pictures. Are the pictures on your Facebook of your wedding day?
I don't even know, honestly.
Or on Emily's? Online.
And maybe I got the idea for you to do it when I seen you come to my Halloween party as a priest. Remember? And you brought that child with you.
Well, he was of age.
I know.
I can't mention his name because we talked about dating. So again, back because you used to throw these Halloween parties that were epic. And yeah, so I had the idea because I could never be appropriate. Is I dressed up as a priest, and then my partner at the time was dressed up as a Boy Scout, and I had found a Boy Scout uniform on eBay that fit him perfectly. And I remember going to your party, and everybody's like, oh, that's funny, you know, he's a priest, and he's got a beer, and oh, that's funny, he's a Boy Scout, and he's got a beer, and wait a minute, you guys are together.
You guys are fucking together.
That's
yeah.
really
oh,
fucked
I get
up.
It.
That's really fucked up.
I get it. But you had some stellar costumes. You came as Batman and Robin.
That was the same partner.
Was it?
Yeah, that was the same partner. We did the Batman and Robin. That would have been 2007, October 2007.
Yeah, something like that. And then you came as that fucking abortion doctor one year.
Yeah,
and that was amazing.
That was one of those Halloweens where I had no money. I went to the Goodwill or DI. And I bought medical scrubs, and then I found a stethoscope, and then I went and got a bunch of baby dolls, and then ripped all their limbs off, and then I put them in this big bag with a bunch of fake blood and cotton, and so it just looks like medical waste from an abortion clinic. And then I came to your party with a wire hanger in one hand and the bag in the other. And I remember all your guests, like, I'm glad they were drinking, because they're like, what the fuck is this? So
and all you could say is, it's Mark.
Yeah, it's Mark. And I think I won a pretty good prize that year at your party.
Yeah, I can't remember, but yeah, those parties were pretty good. And
yeah, I won best abortion clinic doctor at that party.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. So well, that's my story and we're sticking to it.
Yes.
Well, Dirk, I'm going to wrap this episode up. I appreciate you coming on, and I hope in the future you'll come back to the podcast.
Yeah, of course. I got to sit and listen to the rest of them.
Yes, I look forward to your feedback.
So,
but in the meantime, I'm going to wrap up this episode by telling everybody the same thing I tell them every week, and that is to be good, and if you can't be good at it. And if you're sitting in prison, you're not good at it. Good night, everybody.